This is the Voice of America's worldwide coverage of the flight of Apollo 17, man's sixth and final moon landing in the Apollo program. The 13-day mission to the Taurus littoral region of the moon and back will be carried out by astronauts Eugene Cernan, mission commander, Ronald Evans, command module pilot, and Harrison Jack Schmidt, lunar module pilot. Liftoff, the first night launch in the Apollo series, is scheduled for 2 hours 53 GMT, just about 22 minutes from now. The Saturn rocket is poised atop pad 39A with the countdown progressing smoothly. For a description of the Apollo 17 blastoff, we take you to Cape Kennedy and VOA space correspondent Rhett Turner.
Apollo 17, the last of the Apollo manned lunar landing series, is just about ready to head for the moon. 22 minutes from now. Now 21 minutes, 58 seconds. We're watching a giant countdown clock here in the night of Cape Kennedy, the only night launch of all of the Apollo series, and that spectacular rocket standing on its pad, bathed in brilliant night light, is an unusually spectacular sight indeed. That's the word of the hour, because it's just unbelievable, the majesty of this world's greatest rocket standing there on pad 19, ready to lift into the sky. Three precious astronauts, three lives on the way to the moon for America's last lunar exploration in the foreseeable future. It'll be at least 10 years, maybe 15 or 20, before the United States goes back to the moon, possibly to continue the exploration of that planet and learning how our own came to be since creation. With me here is Don Beatty of the National Aeronautics and Space Agency, who's done an awful lot of work in preparing for this one, haven't you, Don?
Well, Brett, it's been a long time getting ready for this launch. It's one I've been looking forward to for a long time with, I guess, a lot of other...
Let's go to Mission Control.
...aboard the second and third stage of the Saturn V vehicle. This is necessary to condition them for the flow of the super cold liquid oxygen and liquid hydrogen. Just a few moments ago, the crew aboard Spacecraft America was given an updated weather forecast. Cernan reported, "I hope it's as beautiful out there as it is in here." Countdown continuing to move smoothly at T-minus 20 minutes, 24 seconds and counting. This is Kennedy Launch Control.
That was Launch Control. That is Chuck Hollingshead in the Launch Control Center, whom you will hear in what's called the firing room as he monitors the flight operatives as they're watching the millions of parameters on this big Saturn rocket preparing for launch. Don Beatty, your particular emphasis has been on preparing the astronauts and the program plan for both the surface work on the moon and for the orbital science, hasn't it? Have you been working on both of those?
Yes, I have, Rhett. We've been working on the experiments for this program and on the mission that we're going to see tonight for about the last 3 years.
Is it fair to say that the way Harrison Schmidt, the first scientist that has gone to the moon, is prepared, and the way the rest of the crew has prepared for this one, that this will be a quantum jump in the amount of science to be returned, the way it's been planned?
Well, we've attempted on this mission, Rhett, to cram in all of the experiments that we feel that will give us some of the answers to the questions we've been asking for many years about the moon. There are a number of new experiments on this flight that have never flown before, so we've really overloaded the mission in a way with experiments.
This is the heaviest liftoff we've ever had because of all that extra load, isn't it?
Well, we are carrying more payload to the lunar surface than we have ever before, and a little bit more payload, I'm talking about science payload now, into lunar orbit.
Mm-hmm. And that's one of the things we'll be talking about in the days to come, particularly during the landing. It affects the way Gene Cernan flies that lunar module down to the surface, his extra weight. He doesn't have quite as much hover time as he has had in the past, as I understand it. Incidentally, the liftoff weight of this gigantic vehicle at the time that the rockets fire and begin to move is 2,923,461 kilograms. 2,923,461 kilograms. Now, that is fast dissipated within 3 minutes because of the fast burning of all of that fuel, RP-1, the kerosene fuel, in the first stage. And as they begin to burn off the liquid hydrogen and liquid oxygen in the second stage, within 3 minutes and 13 seconds, that is down to 643,000 kilograms. That shows you where all the weight is. It's in the fuel. But that's one heck of a weight to lift off of the face of the Earth, I must say. How do you feel about this Cernan and Schmidt team to be on the surface, Don?
Well, I've been with them on many of their training trips. They've been training together now for over a year. We've had them in ideal geological locations all over the United States, and including the island of Hawaii. So I believe that they're as fine a trained team as we've ever had on any of the missions. So I think that they're going to do a bang-up job up there. And I, of course, have expecting that they're going to bring back as many good samples as any of the other crews have in the past.
We'll be talking to you some more about that, Don. Let's listen to the man himself, the commander of the mission, Gene Cernan, who recorded this conversation about the purpose of the overall mission a few days ago in Houston with Jim Parisi.
Gene, give us an idea of the overall purpose of the Apollo 17 mission.
Well, Apollo 17 being the last lunar landing in the Apollo series, it's really got the responsibility of trying to wrap up as much of the information and put together as much of the information, write the last chapter in a book, if you will, the summary of what we've learned from the entire Apollo program. The landing site was picked for several reasons, but one of which was for just the reason I mentioned, a landing site, an area where we could probably tie together as much of the evolution of the moon, as much as we've learned up until this time, tie all that together and come out with some logical conclusions as to the history and the evolution of the moon itself. So we have, as a result, several different and new experiments in our scientific package. We're going to stay just a little bit longer. The landing site is a place that we probably would not have gone to previously, because of our experience. We've gained a great deal of confidence in our ability to go to places that are a little bit more difficult to get into, places that are a little bit more difficult to explore once you get on the surface. The whole evolution of Apollo 17 is sort of built around getting as much information as you possibly can from this last mission and tying it in to all the information that we've learned prior to this.
Are the mechanics very much different from the previous missions?
No.
The mechanics of getting there?
No, not really. As a matter of fact, once you develop a capability in a system such as Apollo to go to the moon, and certainly just as important to us, and I'm sure everybody, a system that'll get you home, you build on that system. You try and profit from your mistakes. You try and profit from the experience. You try and make sure that any of the problems you've had in the past will not happen again. You try and make that system, those spacecraft, better than they were the last time they went. And this is what we've done each time. We've built traditionally on those spacecraft, haven't changed them really, and haven't changed our techniques, just tried to make sure that we will not run into any problems that we've run into before, utilizing the experience we've had, try and predict any problems and prevent them from happening on this mission. Of course, you never know what's going to happen, and no one is ever really entirely smart enough to know what that next little problem is going to be to fix it ahead of time. We've tried to do that, and as a result, the mechanics of the entire going and coming and landing once we get there are pretty much similar, but a little bit more sophisticated than the past.
Would you give us a capsulized rundown of the mission? One big difference in this one is that it starts at night.
Well, we're going to have a night launch, which in itself ought to be spectacular. I understand if it's a clear night, people in the United States will be able to see this liftoff from somewhere about 500 miles from somewhere in North Carolina through Alabama and down into Cuba, as a matter of fact. The night launch is a requirement. It didn't evolve by accident, but it's a requirement in order to get to our landing site in December. It's the only way we can get there. It's the only time of day we can get to where we want to go. But in itself, certainly is a unique part of the flight, and I'm looking forward to that very much. There's only one other place I'd rather be than in the cockpit, and that's to be out watching it, because it ought to be spectacular.
Mm-hmm.
But we'll spend our 3 days getting to the moon. We'll be in lunar orbit for several hours once we get there, doing an awful lot of photographic tasks and experiments within a command and service module itself. And the next day when we get up, we will prepare the limb for its descent. The landing, hopefully, I'd like to say, will be a very uneventful and very nominal happening, although, you know, for someone who's never landed on the surface of the moon, you can never say that things are going to be uneventful in a situation like that. Even if that was a velvet carpet we were landing on rather than a fairly rough terrain, I'm sure it really would be just as interesting, just as exciting, and certainly just as challenging. We're going to spend just a little over 3 days, which is longer than any other mission has spent on the surface of the moon. We're going to go out of spacecraft three times with our lunar rover for periods up to 7 hours each. And if we get 7 hours each on each of those EVAs, it will be the longest time man has stayed outside the spacecraft. And again, because of confidence we've built up by Apollo 15's and 16's operations with the lunar rover, we're going to go further than any other mission has gone because of the geologic interest in the area. We will be going over 7 kilometers away from the lunar module with our rover, and that's a long way. And if those people who are familiar with the terrain, it's very mountainous. We have an earthquake-like cliff structure, scarp, as the geologists call it, that we will climb over with the rover. So the challenge for the rover itself to perform is quite significant. We'll return to the at the end of those 3 days, return to the command and service module, by the way, one which we've called America, and I think very appropriately so. Spend another day and a half in lunar orbit and then return, and it'll be about a 3-day trip coming home.
Total number of days?
Total number of days is 13.
The very best.
Thank you very much.
Commander of Apollo 17, Gene Cernan. This is Jim Parisi at the Manned Spacecraft Center in Houston, Texas.
Back here at the launch site, 10 minutes, 29 seconds until liftoff. Let's go to launch control in Chuck Hollingshead.
Which might be carry-on conversations, which they don't need at that time. Countdown proceeding smoothly. T-minus 10 minutes, 15 seconds and counting. This is Kennedy Launch Control.
Let me report to you what he was giving us there. He said there are a number of system checks and communications checks going on throughout the manned spaceflight network. After the rocket lifts off from here, it will be tracked from here at Cape Kennedy by a big dish for a time. Then it goes out over the ocean. And I believe Canary Islands is still involved during the orbital part of the tracking mode when the spacecraft is orbiting the Earth. Once it goes toward the moon, those three big 85-foot dishes at Goldstone, California, Madrid, Spain, and Honeysuckle Creek, Australia will be on board for tracking this Apollo flight as all the others. And all of that network around the world, communications and tracking network, is going through a last-minute check. Now, all of the systems on board the rocket are hardwired right now, meaning they're connected by wiring right back into the launch control just to our left, about 100 meters from us. And that's where we are, outdoors on top of a small sand mound, which is called the press site. There's some 1,000 or more members of the press from all over the world here. The American television networks are transmitting. The EBU, European Broadcast Union, is transmitting to all Western Europe. We understand that that signal is available into the East European countries also. Japan usually picks up this via television to the west of the United States in the Far East. And there are many television cameras and many eyes, as well as ears, around the world glued to this spot. And you heard Gene Cernan say the word also, spectacular. It's just a gorgeous sight. Every one of these Saturn V rockets is beautiful to see. The immensity, the momentous beauty of that great flame as it shoots up into the sky has always impressed us, and it's expected to be even more beautiful and more unusual. Apollo Control.
8 minutes and counting. T-minus 8 minutes and counting. The Vice President in the firing room at the Launch Control Center observing the final minutes of the countdown, and he'll watch the launch from here. The countdown has proceeded smoothly since picking up at 11:53 a.m. this morning. Our weather continues to look good as we aim toward a 9:53 p.m. Eastern Standard Time launch. Now, T-minus 7 minutes, 37 seconds, and counting. This is Kennedy Launch Control.
I'll try to interrupt whatever we're talking about or whatever we're describing any time that Launch Control comes in. They may come in at any time during this last 7 minutes, 20 seconds of the countdown. About the last 3 minutes, Chuck Hollingshead will be quite busy telling you about the spacecraft and the command and lunar module going on automatic systems in preparation for a liftoff. They've named the command module America and the lunar module Challenger, in case you haven't heard that. The whole great Saturn V rocket complex stretches over 100 meters tall out there, 5 kilometers from us, right before us on the sands of Cape Kennedy. The sky is clearing, believe it or not. We can see a number of stars directly overhead, so that bodes well. If that can hold for another 6 minutes, we're going to be able to see this launch for up through staging of the first stage at the very least. And since it'll be a night launch, we possibly can see it, the second stage burn out for maybe 10 or 11 minutes. I think the horizon would be our only real limitation in seeing this tonight, because looking out to the east, we can also see stars to the east. So the gods are with us. The weather is breaking nicely. It's a bit damp, but that isn't hurting us, is it, Don?
No, not right now. Everything's looking very good, Red.
Okay. We still see some of the oxygen boiling off as it vaporizes, this highly pressurized liquid oxygen. Here's launch control.
T-minus 5 minutes, 54 seconds, and counting. At this time, entering the final phases of the countdown, various elements of the team reporting into test supervisor Bill Schick with their go, no-goes for launch. At launch time, a water deluge system at the pad will spray water over the entire area of the pad, some 400,000 gallons of water, more than an average family would use in 3 years, will be spread over the pad and the swing arms, protecting them from the searing flames of the Saturn V first stage. Various elements reporting in now. First stage reporting, they are go.
That's the first stage of the rocket.
Range safety.
Watching that.
Superintendent of Range Operations, they are go. Launch Operations Manager reports he is go for launch. Launch Director Walter Caprian has given a go for launch.
That's the man who decides.
We passed the 5 minute mark, T minus 4 minutes, 55 seconds and counting, and swing arm number 9 now coming back to the fully retracted position. The launch escape system sitting atop the spacecraft named America by the crew, now could pull the crew to safety if there were any problems while the vehicle remains on the pad or during the early portions of the flight. At the T-minus 4 minute mark, we'll be standing by for a word from the launch vehicle test conductor, Norm Carlson, giving a clear for the launch vehicle ignition. At T-minus 3 minutes, 7 seconds, we'll go on an automatic sequencer. It's called the terminal countdown sequencer. The astronauts on the Astrocom circuit now reporting and thanking the launch team for all their prayers and all their help.
The searchlights are shining on one puff of cloud which has drifted over to the north out of just one little puff of cloud there.
Wishes you good luck and Godspeed, reports the launch operations manager over the Astrocom circuit. T-minus 3 minutes 40 seconds, the countdown continuing to go along smoothly. Once we go on the terminal countdown sequencer, the count will be automatic from there on out. The countdown sequencer will initiate the various functions from that time on.
Automatic control.
However, the men here in the firing room will be monitoring their consoles, watching temperatures, pressures, various readouts. They could override that terminal sequencer if necessary. Moving up now to the time when we'll go on that terminal sequencer, T-minus 3 minutes, 10 seconds, and counting. Spacecraft ready light has come on, indicating that the spacecraft is ready. We are now on the terminal sequencer. Launch sequence has started.
That means it's all automatic from
flowing
here.
Flowing of that water on the pad will begin at the 1 minute mark. Flowing on the flame deflector below the launch vehicle, on the launch pedestal itself, and along the swing arms, which will be coming back at liftoff. Instrument unit ready light has come on. Emergency detection system ready light is on. All indications are we are go for launch as we approach the 2-minute, 30-second mark.
Several of the
swing arms are still
there. Pressurization of the
various propellant tanks now aboard the space vehicle is starting. S2, or second stage, liquid oxygen tanks now pressurized. These propellant tanks are pressurized with helium to ensure that during the flight, the fuel flows properly down through the engines. It's quiet here in the firing room now as the men are monitoring their consoles, looking at the temperatures, checking pressures, and a variety of parameters to ensure everything is in a go condition.
It looks very quiet.
Pressurization continuing on the fuel tanks. At this time, we'll go to the critical power transfer at the T-minus 50-second mark in the countdown. At that time, we'll transfer from our external power source to the flight batteries aboard the space vehicle.
Minute and a half to go. Minute and 35
final
seconds.
Action by the crew aboard the spacecraft America will be a final guidance alignment. This conducted by the spacecraft commander, Gene Cernan.
That's the navigation
the flight of
system.
Apollo 17 will be able to be seen, depending on weather conditions, some 500 miles away as it goes into Earth orbit. Pressurization continuing. Liquid hydrogen tanks now aboard the second stage have been pressurized. All propellants aboard the second stage now pressurized.
1 minute.
A cover aboard the cue ball. This is the cue ball system on top of the launch escape system will be pulled off just shortly before launch.
We'll see flame
first
at 10 seconds before liftoff.
Propellant tanks have been pressurized. Now past the 1 minute mark, and we are going on internal power. Now all systems to internal power. We'll be looking for the engine start sequence at the 8.9-second mark in the countdown. The engines will build up to a thrust of 7.6 million pounds. T-minus 30 seconds. We have a cutoff. We have a cutoff at T-minus 30 seconds.
Cutoff. Something in the automatic sequence has stopped the launch.
Mark. We'll bring word to you just as soon as we get it. We have a cutoff at T-minus 30 seconds. T-minus 30 seconds and holding. This is Kennedy Launch Control.
There it is. There's a cutoff at 30 seconds. Something in the automatic sequencer caused the countdown to stop. That means that we're at 30 seconds and holding while the flight control analyzes the problem. We don't know yet what caused the cutoff, but we could hear one of the flight directors call out across the control room, cutoff. We could hear it, hear his voice echoing through the flight control where Chuck Hollingshead,
this
our
is Apollo
voice
Saturn
of launch control.
Here is. We're holding at the 30-second mark. This was an automatic cutoff, by the terminal sequencer. As mentioned, this sequencer initiates various actions. Each action must take place and must be completed before the next one can be initiated. If anything does not get completed in time, there will be an automatic cutoff. This cutoff was automatic, done by the sequencer. We're standing by now to check just what the problem was. Now, T-minus 30 seconds and holding. This is Kennedy Launch Control.
That's the story. 30 seconds to go before liftoff. Something in the automatic counting mechanism caused a cutoff. Since it was this close, from all of the launches I've seen, Don, I would say that it isn't necessarily something that's going to be of monumental nature. I would speculate that at this point. Wouldn't you say that since it's this close to liftoff, it's probably some system caution?
Well, I think it's a little bit too early to say
right
now.
You don't want
to
speculate, then.
There are a number of things that could cause this to happen at this point.
This Apollo Saturn launch control, the astronaut crew aboard the spacecraft going through their various safing now, safing of all systems, and the launch team here continuing through their emergency procedures. We'll be standing by to check out the problem just as soon as we can get word.
Now, the fact that they're going
through... T-minus 30 seconds and holding. This is Kennedy Launch Control.
Now, the fact that they're going through the safing procedures, meaning turning off all of these pyrotechnic devices that are part of their abort safety mechanisms, that means it will take some more time to recycle. So now we do have a built-in delay beyond that remaining 30-second hold. We go back quite a number of minutes, as a matter of fact.
That's right. I'm not sure how many minutes now, but they will have to recycle the count and then pick up the count again at some time prior to where we're holding right now.
I don't know if this, of course, has nothing probably to do with the real problem, but right at the 30-second point, I thought I saw an extra puff or two of liquid oxygen there, but it could just be the way the winds are drifting around that first stage. I'm just reporting that to you, our listeners, because I just happened to see it. And that whole first stage is covered with frosting and ice, and it was highly pressurized, and so there's probably just a bit more of that liquid oxygen to be bled off for safety. At this point, there is slightly larger cloud coming from it than there was before, but that doesn't necessarily mean that has anything to do with what caused the cutoff. Now, there are so many men, engineers, watching dials, instruments, gauges, monitoring the thousands of systems aboard the rocket and spacecraft mechanisms that I would expect that right at this moment somebody has a pretty good idea what caused the cutoff. They're just making a meticulous determination of it.
Here's launch control. Procedures continuing at this time up to the T-minus 30-second mark. The countdown had been proceeding smoothly. Weather conditions at launch were predicted to be and appeared to be good at that time. However, we had an automatic cutoff from the terminal countdown sequencer, and we're standing by to see just what caused that automatic cutoff. All systems being safed at this time. T-minus 30 seconds, and we are in a hold. This is Kennedy Launch Control.
And there is Chuck Hollingshead in Launch Control repeating for you just what we know at this moment. The countdown went perfectly right down to T-minus 30 seconds. The automatic sequencer was in operation, meaning that all phases of the countdown and liftoff were under automatic control. Then at 30 seconds, one of the engineers noticed on his monitoring gauges an automatic cutoff. He called out through the launch control center, and we could all hear that through in the background behind our reporter there, Mr. Hollingshead. Now, the engineers are now analyzing what caused the automatic cutoff at 30 seconds before liftoff. The astronauts, Cernan, Evans, and Schmidt, are going through their routine procedures of safing or making safe all of the pyrotechnic devices that are in the command module system, normally used in case an abort is needed. These are little explosive devices that can loosen the command module from the rocket structure, from the command module from the service module, and also retro or escape rockets on top that can arm them for lifting the spacecraft off the top of the pad and out into space away from the rocket should something be dangerous down below in this huge 2 million kilogram hunk of explosives, of volatile fuels, liquid hydrogen, liquid oxygen, the very powerful RP-1 kerosene mixture in that first stage. This is that there's a lot of volatile material there, as we see normally under very controlled conditions as they fire the F-1 engine. We can see a TV camera monitor out on the launch structure looking down onto the rest of the rocket with that liquid hydrogen cloud coming off. It's a safety device to spill off the building up, the pressure that builds up when the liquid oxygen begins to warm slightly and increase pressure there in its monstrous tank. Don, have you any idea about what sort of time frame is involved in this sort of analysis procedure? Don Beatty. Well, here's Apollo Control.
This is Apollo Saturn Launch Control. We're continuing in our hold at the 30-second mark while the launch team assesses our problem. The swing arm number 9, will be brought back to its park position, which is 12 degrees back from the space vehicle. Continuing the safing procedures this time and assessing the problem. Holding at T-minus 30 seconds, this is Kennedy Launch Control.
Kennedy Launch Control. So they brought the swing arm back up just to the park position, which is just a few centimeters, maybe a meter or two away from the hatch through which the astronauts must exit, through which they entered the command craft. Don, my question again. Can you describe a bit more of what you know about this analysis procedure when an automatic cutoff comes?
Well, of course, all of the information that's being generated by the equipment on board the spacecraft and in the rest of the rocket is coming back automatically into the firing room or the launch control center and is being monitored by the engineers who are responsible for the various systems and subsystems. I would suspect that they already have some idea of where the problem is. They want to double check it or triple check it and then discuss it a little bit before they'll make an announcement as to what the problem is. And I imagine they're also waiting until they can make some sort of an assessment as to what the real delay might be.
And so we watch here as this beautiful rocket on a lovely balmy Florida night, as it's turning out, just stands there so peacefully, so majestically on its launch pad before us here on the sands of Cape Kennedy. The countdown clock in front of the big press bleacher still shows 30 seconds to liftoff. But there is no doubt in our minds that once the count picks up that it will have to back up to some minutes before that at least. The astronauts, as we have said, have now made safe all of the escape devices, the pyrotechnic devices normally used for an abort if that were required to shoot off from the top of the rocket mechanism. Now, the fact that they are making those devices safe is a further indication that the rest of the rocket has been made safe also, that all of the devices which fire the rocket are now shut off and that power to them is made safe also. There is, should that swing arm be necessary, should it be determined that the astronauts should make a hasty exit and have a minute or two to do it, and that the abort mechanism would not be needed to blast off the top of the Saturn V rocket, the swing arm would come all the way in, the hatch can be opened within 10 seconds time, and the astronauts can go across that swing arm and then almost dive into a chute-type mechanism that can take them down to the bottom of the launch pad and into a tunnel deep underground where they would be safe should the whole rocket blow up or be unsafe or should there be danger of explosion. A few more clouds have drifted into the area. Some of the searchlights, these very bright xenon searchlights shining upon the launch complex from all angles, all the way around the launch complex. These lights shine up into the sky, too, and if a cloud happens to pass across, the lights shine upon them. That creates a lovely and somewhat eerie sight here, too. There's a big white puff right over the launch complex area right now. It looks to be at about 2,000 meters to me, if my pilot's eye is correct. We can still see some stars overhead and out to the east. And so, so far, the weather has been very good for launch. This time of the year in Florida, it's rather balmy. Temperatures are moderate, but there is considerable moisture. There is what's called a cold front stretching out across the northern Gulf of Mexico coast, across the northern part of Florida, and swinging up the east coast. This has been moving very fast in the last 24 hours. From El Paso, Texas, across Houston, where Mission Control is. It passed through Houston last night at about this time. And over here into the Florida area today, it is approaching us. And this cold front has ahead of it for several hundred miles, several hundred kilometers, broken clouds and scattered showers, some thunderstorms. Earlier, within the last hour or so tonight, we could see out to sea where there is heat coming up from the ocean, generating, it takes heat to make a weather machine work. We could see some scattered thunder showers building up and some lightning in those showers. Those were out to sea considerably. Here's Apollo Control.
We're continuing our hold at the T-minus 30-second mark as the launch team assesses our problem. At this time, swing arm number 9 is going back to the 12-degree park position. This is in a position about 15 to 20 feet from the spacecraft. All safing procedures have proceeded normally. We're continuing our hold while we assess the problem at T-minus 30 seconds. This is Kennedy Launch Control.
That's swing arm number 9, about which he was describing. That's the astronaut escape or loading service arm. It is being parked at about 5 meters from the hatch area of the spacecraft. You're listening to the Voice of America's worldwide coverage of the expected liftoff, the beginning of Apollo 17, the last of the Apollo missions to the moon.